What's up, guys? Welcome back to Mission Accomplished. My name is Michelle.
I'm Garrett.
And today we have a very special guest. You guys love when we have guests on the podcast. This one is extra, extra special because if you know me from my BuzzFeed days, you probably know her as well. We have today a very impressive and incredibly talented and humble human being. Her name is Kelsey Impeachike, also known as Kelsey Dangerous. She is the host of multiple highly successful shows surrounding gaming and the gaming industry, including the 100 Baby Challenge, which is tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of views by this point collectively on BuzzFeed Multiplayer. She is also the host of the brand new Sims TBS show, Sims Sparked, which is super, super exciting. She is also a very prolific standalone YouTube channel and Twitch channel. And she is just a wonderful human being and someone who is so ingrained in a lot of very specific communities that we love and support as well. So everybody, welcome Kelsey. Woo, 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 woo. Yay.
what an intro. I'm like so honored.
Welcome, Kelsey. Welcome. We are so, so excited to have you. I have so many questions to ask you. So much that I feel like we've caught up on since, you know, like you've begun your channel. I began my channel and whatnot. But I want to touch base on everything and just like chat about everything. Is this your guys' first time meeting you and Garrett?
No, we actually met at VidCon.
I think we met at VidCon, but we also met when you came in with Michelle to film the video where we swapped diets as well.
Yes. I popped in for a moment there and then again at VidCon. So okay.
Mildly acquainted, yes. Mildly acquainted, to clarify for the audience what that means. Kelsey and I did a video where we swapped diets for a week, which sounds simple, but was actually more difficult than I thought it would be.
For two people that try to be fairly healthy, at least on my side, try to be fairly healthy, on your end, actually is very healthy.
I don't know. I feel like if we were to do it again now, it would be very different because I eat more pasta now. That's for sure.
Same. Yeah. My quarantine diet is very different.
Yeah.
Than everything is so different. Pre-quarantine. I eat ice cream at least once a week because I just like it too much. And I'm like, no one cares.
Amazing.
Gyms are closed. Everything's hard.
Well, if you guys are watching the visual component on YouTube, if you're not, hello, come on over. You'll see that Kelsey donning her new red hair is also in her beautiful Twitch streaming setup. I think it's so, so great. And I actually want to start there because so when I worked at BuzzFeed and we were there concurrently, which was, I feel like we were only overlapping for like 6 or 9 months maybe before I left. And now you've been there such a while and have grown so much. It's been wonderful to see. And one of the things that you have capitalized on and really made a name for yourself in is the gaming community. So I started, I actually did a video. It's coming out soon called I Train Like a Professional Gamer. And I have never played games before. Like I had never played through anything. I experienced playing Super Mario for the first time. I experienced playing Zelda for the first time. And ultimately,
we can't just gloss over
that. Did you like
it? It was so ridiculous because I didn't know how, I don't want to use the word bad. But bad it was. Literally, like, she just jumping and moving and, like, not knowing what the star versus the mushroom versus the fire flower does.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I don't want to spoil anything, but she got the fire flower, didn't know that she could hit B to shoot fireballs. So she thought, oh, Mario gets an outfit change when she gets the fire flower.
Well, there are no instructions anywhere.
Yeah.
So it was How do you figure this out? It was a really interesting experiment to see somebody, and that's something we go into in our video game episode, is the language of video games. And from a young age, it's ingrained into our brain that A is jump and B is like a special ability and these sorts of items do this. And that language builds and builds over time. And Michelle never learned that language. So it was really interesting seeing somebody at your age really struggle to grasp. Like, it was almost like speaking a new language.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, what is up? What is down? All the physics were different.
We had a lot of work.
Yeah. We had a lot of work ahead of us. And eventually, so I worked with the Jinji professional esports team. And they gave me like a full setup, a coach and everything to learn and train and then compete in Fortnite. It was so difficult. So I have a newfound appreciation and respect for you, which is great.
Aww.
and not just in playing video games, but I think the idea of streaming and Twitch. And that's something we definitely want to jump into today. And maybe where you want to start.
Girl, that's where I was segueing.
Great.
All right, here we go. So, yeah, I mean, we've been Twitch streaming for probably a month now. And I have, I mean, I didn't understand truly why people enjoyed it. Why, I mean, I have watched it before, but I mean, seeing as I didn't know what jump or skip or a rainbow mushroom was, I would watch and not even know, like, what the heck is going on. But there is so much that goes into streaming. I mean, it's been a month and I feel like I'm still figuring out my graphics, overlays, like all the transitions and whatnot. And yours look amazing, by the way. Yours are awesome. You make it seem so easy. And I think people really undervalue the level of, first of all, like technological presentation you have to do it well. And also being able to host and be interesting for like
hours.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a learning curve. I remember when I started streaming on Twitch about 2 years ago, and I did it as like a New Year's resolution because I just was really passionate and wanted to get to know the platform really well. And I found that for me, it was easiest to get to know it by doing it. And then I decided I wanted to make a video out of it because that makes me take things seriously. I feel like we can probably relate about that. You're like, well, if I want to get to know something, I might as well do it full hog. And so I did a video where I like tried to like become Twitch famous and had like Pokimane come in and like talk to me about her experience streaming. And so yeah, like when I first started, there's so much technical knowledge to learn and like programs and things like that. Like all of my first streams were real bad. They had so many glitches and a lot of that stuff, if you can't get past that barrier, no one will want to watch because like you don't really want to watch like someone cutting in and out and having bad audio for like 2 hours. That sounds miserable. So yeah, there's a lot of learning that you have to do before you can even start. And I think that that's one of the interesting parts about Twitch streaming that isn't necessarily the same for other types of streaming. You know, like you could stream on Instagram Live and just press a button on your phone. And Twitch streaming is, you can do that, but there's a lot more to a lot of, specifically the gaming aspect of it.
Yeah, and it's also, there's no sense of intuition about it because we can at least, like, you can watch a movie and learn things about how to make a movie just by watching the actual art form itself, or even, like, garner some intuition about how to edit something. But Twitch streaming, I mean, Streamlabs, OBS, like all this stuff, it's a lot. I mean, we started working with a graphic designer and so I really commend everyone who does it themselves and does it fully and wholeheartedly. I think it's so, so cool. What has been your favorite part about Twitch streaming and growing this new audience? Because I love how interactive it is. I know people are like, ooh, it's really interactive. And I'm like, but you don't get it. Like, you're actually getting to chat live with people.
And we talk about this a lot, but the community aspect of Twitch, I didn't know existed until we started diving into it. And that is so rewarding. Even if it's like a dedicated 20 people, it is just such a new way to interface with an audience in a way that is just so much more rewarding than I've ever experienced.
Yeah, I mean, I was probably going to say the same thing. I feel like you could ask anyone that is on Twitch and they're going to say that exact same thing, is that that's, I think, what makes Twitch special, is that it's an entertainment art form that is, like, in essence, community building and interactive. And, like, that's what makes the art. It's not like you made a video and you put it up and people enjoy it on their own. Like, they, the audience themselves become part of the art and the entertainment. You know, and I think that's part of the fun of it. When I was growing up, I gamed with my brother, my older brother, and he was the one that kind of like played games with me, or sometimes didn't let me play games, and therefore I wanted to play games more because like he was trying to stop me from doing it. But a lot of times I would sit with him, and even if it was a one player game, I would watch him play or he'd watch me play and we'd talk. And that's such a big part of our relationship even now when we get together. Sometimes we'll just like want to play through a game together, but one of us doesn't actually want to play. And so that's kind of what Twitch was when I first started. It felt a lot like that, of like, you get to play through a game and experience it with other people and chat with them the whole time and share this like media together. And so it just felt like very intimate and very exciting and fun. I like a lot of the inside jokes that are Twitch related, but also then you make your own through the community a lot. And you get to, you really get to know people and like what they like. And you see them every day, you know, every 3 days a week for 3 hours a time. And you're going to get to know like people's lives, which is pretty crazy. And I don't think any other platform, unless you put a lot of effort into getting to know people, that won't happen organically. Whereas on Twitch, like that's baked in to the experience.
I love what you said about the audience becomes a part of the art form. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
So on the podcast, we often like to talk about, you know, people accomplishing their goals, dreams, missions, etc.
Fourth mission accomplished.
And you were able to transition from a YouTube and Instagram platform over to Twitch and pretty successfully build quite a sizable audience in a pretty quick amount of time on Twitch. How, like, what do you attribute to that success?
So largely, I would say that having built a platform in other places helped a lot. I think that when you're first starting out on Twitch, it's really hard just to get people to watch any people, because you need to like have people in order to kind of engage with them and make Twitch valuable. So it was nice bringing some people over, but I will admit like it wasn't a huge, you know, influx at first. And I think that, you know, building a community and carving out what your take on games is, not just playing a game, but this is the value that I want people to have when they like from my content. This is what I want them to take away. And largely my content, it's the same across all platforms. I want like positivity. I want you to feel good and happy and just giggle and have fun. And that's normally what I want on all platforms. But even more so on Twitch, I feel like it's supporting people and hyping up each other and, you know, moving through failure gracefully, you know, laughing through it, and just being like real and honest and taking the moments as they come. In YouTube, I can edit out, you know, the things I don't like about both myself and like the content itself, right? You can just be like, oh, that part's boring, I'll skip it. But there's certain experiences that you'll have on Twitch, like, you know, that where things will come your way and you can't edit it out. You have to roll with the punches. And so I think that makes a more real, authentic aspect of it. And I think that's what I appreciate about my community. And I think that's what I brought to Twitch that made my Twitch community grow organically in and of itself as its own unit.
Yeah, you were just talking about that the other day, about not like YouTube being able to edit yourself in the way that you mm-hmm. would like to be presented, and then jumping
yeah,
onto Twitch and
it's
being
great.
Yeah.
I know.
And I'm also curious too, because so when you started at BuzzFeed, you were such an impressive overall producer, like very well-rounded. You were so good at coming up with viral ideas, period, on YouTube, in a lot of different arenas, which I don't know if people even remember or recognize, so I want to recognize
you
for
you.
That. I want to say, like, in your fellowship class, you had, like, the highest view count of anybody, whether or not you were present in the videos, and that's a testament to who you are as a producer. But at that time, when I knew you, you weren't doing as much specifically in the gaming space. So was that in your career something that you chose to do actively of, I'm going to put my head down, get in the views, and then when I have that trust from the company or even the audience, transition over to the thing I want to do? Or was it like a, oh, I guess I could make viral videos about this as well?
It was 100% the first one. I when I came into BuzzFeed, I definitely wanted to prove that I knew how to be a good BuzzFeed producer. And that was like my first and foremost goal. And so I tried to like master and tackle every format that BuzzFeed did at the time, and be able to make a hit with that format. Because I just also thought they were cool, and it gave me an opportunity to talk to all different producers that were, I think, experts in those formats and learn from them. And at a certain point, I got to the point where my manager and the fellowship was like, okay, well, you've done pretty much all of the tasks we've asked you to do. What would you want to do? And I said gaming, because no one was doing it. And so it was an opportunity to kind of strike. Like, gaming was obviously being done by YouTube, but it wasn't being done by BuzzFeed. And so it was an opportunity to try something new that has never been done by BuzzFeed before, and try to find where the BuzzFeed voice fit in the gaming world. And so I don't think starting at BuzzFeed, that was my goal. It wasn't like, okay, I'll get them to trust me. And then, but eventually that's kind of what I came to, is like, I wanted to prove myself first and then think about what content I wanted to make second. I'm pretty happy with how I did it. I think I really wanted to master the craft and understand what people love about BuzzFeed, because I was a big BuzzFeed fan before working there. And so after that, it kind of just felt like whatever I did had a BuzzFeed voice for BuzzFeed. And then I started gaming.
That's amazing, because I remember being there, and you're absolutely right, because the two top search things on YouTube are gaming and beauty. And BuzzFeed wasn't really doing that for, you know, the first several years of its existence, which is bizarre considering you know, how it's considered to be a staple of the internet and YouTube in a lot of ways.
Right.
And yeah, I think what you did is so smart also, because I think that people, like, there is this perception, and one that I find myself having to correct within myself as well, of things will be easy for me when. Things will be easy for me when I get a job at BuzzFeed. Things will be easy for me when I prove I have the numbers, when I have this, or when I hit so many subscribers. And every step of the way, you're going to have to put your head down and work really, really
it's
hard.
Never easy.
I mean, it's literally never going to be easy.
It's never easy.
We spoke to, you know, a couple episodes ago, J.D. Roth, who is the producer of over 2,000 episodes of reality television. And he's done all these huge shows before, including Karma. And he even said, every day, like, I put my head down and work really hard. It never gets easier. And I think what is really smart about that, too, is that I think some people, like, when they get the dream job or whatever, they think, I can, you know, I'm going to immediately go to the passion part of it, and not recognize, like, there's an opportunity to learn. There's an opportunity to prove myself. And I think that's a great lesson in any industry to take, that you're always learning and growing.
Yeah, I mean, and I expect the same was with you, Kelsey, when you transitioned from YouTube to Twitch and trying to build that. Like, even though you have an audience to transfer over, it still, I assume, wasn't easy. It was still something you had to work really hard towards. Can you talk to us a little bit about that and, like, what that journey was trying to build that platform for yourself?
I think it's been different because of Twitch's, in essence, a second job. So when I started taking it on, I realized that I had such a full schedule already. It was, I think the most difficult part was keeping consistency and, like, finding time to do it, because it's a pretty big investment of time. And so eventually I had to just schedule it into my life. And I think that was like the first step, is like committing to it and being like, I really want to, like you said, Michelle, put my head down and work hard at this and not just like do it for fun on the side. And so I kind of decided that I was going to super invest in it. So I started investing in the equipment that I needed. I invested in like my time and scheduled out, okay, this is what my schedule is. And every week I'm going to do it. And then that's when I started to see like more consistent viewership. And then it's all about, you know, figuring out what the audience likes that's already watching you, iterating off of that. And then also just like being aware of Twitch itself, like what games are trending, what, you know, what people are gravitating towards, but also what makes sense for your brand. Like, I am not a Fortnite streamer, and I don't think I could compete.
I think it's time.
It's hard. It's hard to like choose Fortnite and be like, oh, I want to be in that genre. Because if you click there, like the first three tiers are just thousands of viewers per person, and it's hard to be seen. You know, so like I kind of decided, okay, I'll go middle of the road. I did like Overwatch for a while, and Overwatch was pretty similar. It's very competitive, and a lot of people stream in it. And so then I decided, okay, well, what do my audience love about me? And I started doing kind of a little more variety games, testing other things. I found Dead by Daylight. That one did pretty well for a while. It was competitive, but a little less popular, but popular enough that people are still searching for it. And it's all kind of like doing that. It's like it's a constant learning of, and eventually now I mainly stream Animal Crossing, because that just seems like the perfect fit for my audience. And I still stream a little bit of The Sims, and now I'm going to try Ooblets next, because that seems like a good one. But it's always try fails. It's always testing new stuff and trying to grow, and then finding, oh, my audience really likes this so far, I'll try to do this. And to capture a new audience, a lot of it is about like, you know, being seen on the platform, but also about like connecting to other streamers, doing collaborations, putting your name out there as often as you can, like notifying people that you stream, trying to get them to come in. And then also like finding good titles for your streams, you know, because like the title of the stream is what the viewers on Twitch see, so they don't know you. Your viewers that know you probably won't even look at the title, to be honest. A lot of times they don't. Right. They'll be like, what are we playing today?
I'm like, it's so much.
It's under there. But your viewers will see the notification. So like it's always like in my mind, I have to like, okay, what would I want to say to the people that like me and already like me to get them to come in through the notification? And then what do I want to say to people that don't know who I am, and what's like the cool thing? So maybe like include, like right now I'm rebuilding my island, and so I'm talking to my audience about, you can help me rebuild the island. And to the more Twitch audience, I'm saying, I'm rebuilding my island in a Disney theme. And then you're like, oh, that's cool, like I like Disney and I like this, maybe I'll check that out. And that's kind of like the twofold way of, I think, growth on Twitch. It's about like finding ways to get your name further out and draw in new audiences that like what you like, but then also maintaining the audience you have and making sure they're constant, you know, they're involved and entertained and want to keep coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really smart.
Right now,
there's a lot of moving parts on Twitch.
Yeah, I think we're making a big mistake. We're only serving our current audience, because all of our titles are just huge inside jokes with everything that has been happening on our streams. So, yeah, it's, we really need to take that advice for sure.
Okay, I'm like, I'm taking notes. I have my notepad out. Oh my goodness. Wow. So you landed on Animal Crossing and you're rebuilding
recently,
the island.
Yeah.
The audience is helping you. That's so smart.
Michelle's going to drag you into Fortnite, whether you like it or not.
I would love to be carried through Fortnite by you, Michelle. You build so beautifully. I could never build. That's like always a thing I'd forget to do in Fortnite, which is why I ended up playing more like PUBG and Apex, because they didn't have building.
Yeah.
But I always want to learn, because that's the big advantage. Is if you know how to build, then you're way better.
Well, it's only because I was forced to. By my coach, basically every single day of my training, I would do an hour in creative mode, which is, I would just go in like an empty map and like practice the same keybind patterns over and over and over again.
Just building that muscle memory.
Yeah, you know? No one wants to do that. So,
Well, that's a lot of gaming in general, is like just time spent. And it kind of goes back to where you guys were talking earlier, is like, it's definitely a language. And each game also has a little bit of a different one. So like, you might be like really jamming on one game on one platform on Switch or something, and then I switch to like a PlayStation game and like two buttons are swapped, and then I'm like, oh crap. And so you keep like messing up the game because you like are doing the wrong action all the time. You're like
And I have like a really bizarre situation because I don't even know how to use a controller. Like, I only know PC.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. Like, it was really foreign watching you try to hold an N64 controller and then figure out, where do I put my hands on this? Like, having that on video is amazing.
You didn't tell me. The purpose of the scene in the video is Garrett and our friend Christina basically they just put on the games, and they're not allowed to say anything to me or give me any advice.
That's great, though. It's good. That's good writing. That's good storytelling to... you know, start you in one place and show you an ending in a whole other place. Working hard pays off.
Yeah, and I also think that, speaking of working hard, do people know that you stream outside of work hours? Like, I know people know it's at night, but you're doing that on top of, I just finished a 9-to-5, which could involve filming.
I think people forget. Yeah, I think people do forget, because a lot of times people complain about how late my streams are. And I'm like, yeah, I'm so sorry. Like, if I could move them to during the day, I totally would. but I can't. So I also do it on weekends early in the morning on Sundays so that I can get, like, other hours for other people that is more good for their lifestyles. But, yeah, I think people forget, you know. But... you know, I love doing all of the things, so it doesn't feel like too much, but it does sometimes feel like work, for sure, you know, because it's a lot. It's a lot, like, editing all day or filming all day and then jumping on to, like, a 2 to 3 hour stream. You know, you're not always going to get your best self on them, but I think that that's one reason why I like Twitch, too, is that no one expects perfection on Twitch, and that's why I like Twitch, is because I don't need to be my best self. I just need to be myself and, like, my real self. And people, like, I've come on to Twitch and been, like, really burnt out and sad and people just like being able to commiserate with that. They're like, maybe I am too. And then we all kind of like have that real moment of compassion and stuff that you don't get on any other platform. Right, like, I'm not gonna post a sad photo of myself on Instagram to commiserate with people, but you know, sometimes when you're live and you want to be there with your audience, like, you're gonna go through the ups and downs, and I think that's what's special too. So sometimes I'll take the day off, though, if it's, you know, if I need the time, I'll take it off.
Wee-oo.
Ad alert.
You know what's nice after a long day of YouTubing and Twitching, or even just working at the office?
Yeah, Dungeons and Dragons.
A big glass of wine.
And wine.
That's what I'm talking about. And we are so, so excited to announce today we have our very first sponsor. Usualwines.com is this amazing website where you can order wines in these cute little single-serve flasks right to your door if you're stuck at home just like us and you don't want to leave. So each bottle is 6.3 ounces, which is about a glass and a half of wine. Sometimes y'all know we need that extra half. And this is actually really nice because something I run into is if I open a bottle of wine, I feel compelled to finish it quickly.
Or we just waste it all.
Yeah, or we end up pouring it down the drain. So this is way less wasteful and way more efficient. Usual wines are made from world-class AVAs in California, including places like Napa, Sonoma, and Santa Barbara.
And they're made with minimal intervention, zero sugar, and zero additives.
Usual has a red blend, a rosé, and a sparkling white wine called Brut. They also have a limited production Brut Rosé just for the summer.
Did you know, Michelle, in the United States, that there are over 60 additives allowed by law to be used in winemaking? See, I just learned this literally right now.
Usual doesn't use any chemical or sugar additives to enhance the flavors or stability of their wine. Therefore, they are truly a clean wine brand. And I know what you're thinking, but don't grapes have sugar?
Oh, we're about to blow your mind.
Yes, they have sugar. To clarify, all usual wines are produced using natural, sustainable grapes harvested every fall. These grapes are picked at optimal ripeness to ensure all sugar will be fermented completely until the wines are dry with no residual sugar. All that's left over is delicious, clean wine. So if you want to try some usual wines, be sure to go to their website, www.usualwines.com, and use our discount code
Mission,
M-I-S-S-I-O-N, for $8 off your first order, and try your first glass on us.
I have some just real talk questions that I want to throw into the mix.
Real talk.
So
sound effect for real talk.
Yeah, I'll figure something out there.
Real talk.
So in terms of real talk, I just like asking some like deeper questions just to see where people's heads are at. So Kelsey, everything that you're doing, what are you building towards? What is like your dream goal?
Yeah, tell us the end of the book.
What do you want, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because I think every time I think about this question, it changes for me. You know, I obviously want to build a community on YouTube and on Twitch. I'm enjoying those platforms. And so I think having, you know, bigger communities there and like getting to do that more and lean into those platforms more on my own would be great. Sometimes I think that I would love to just produce more like traditional media, like film or TV, and move into that because I really just love producing. And I love like putting teams together and figuring out details and then seeing like final products. That's what has been really gratifying for the Dungeon Club. For me is like going back to like bringing a full team together and producing, which you do all the time, Michelle, so beautifully on all of your videos. Like they're such big videos because there's a lot of like talented people on them, including yourself. And you're the one that kind of, you know, cultivates beautiful ideas. And I like doing those kind of things as well, like bigger things. So sometimes it's that. Recently, I've been interested in writing again since I used to want to be a writer when I was in college and then wanted to move into acting. So, and acting also is an interest. So it's hard. It depends on my mood. If I'm like, today I'm going to be like a novelist when I grow up, you know, but I think that overall, like end goal is just to be like creatively fulfilled and keep chasing the thing that like sounds fun, because that's what I've pretty much done up till now. It's like, oh, Twitch sound fun, let's do it, and I'm gonna work hard and figure out how to be the best Kelsey on Twitch I can be. And so it's, you know, at the moment I'm focusing on what I'm focusing on, and I always have an eye on the horizon, but I don't always know the destination, and I think I like it that way.
Wow. Everyone take notes. That was so good. I could listen to you talk all day.
Oh, thanks.
So you mentioned the Dungeon Club.
It's like a pretty answer for saying, like, I don't know. I have to bring this up
because I'm biased. I'm obsessed with Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah. And what's cool about D&D, and I've preached this many, many times on even this podcast before.
Well, let's explain what the Dungeon Club is first.
Yes. I'll let you take that one, Kelsey.
Oh, yeah, sure. So the Dungeon Club is a Dungeons & Dragons-inspired live RPG show. I got like deeply into Dungeons and Dragons as a fan, not as a player, like the end of maybe last year or mid last year. And I started like watching every Dungeons and Dragons content online. So I watched like all Critical Role.
Yeah.
You know, I listened to Dungeons and Daddies, which is a podcast. And it's fantastic. If you haven't listened to it yet, please do yourself the favor because it's excellent. And Harmon Quest, I think Adventure Zone. There's like a ton out there.
Is Dungeons and Daddies Freddie W's?
Adventure Zone?
Dungeons and Daddies.
Dungeons and Daddies. Were you saying who is it? Freddie?
Was that Freddie Wong? Was that his? Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah, there's tons. Oh my God, there's so many good, so much good D&D content out there.
So I started like watching it all and really being passionate because it reminded me a lot of like live storytelling, kind of like I was doing on The Sims. So like I kind of would take characters and then create little stories with them out of like these challenges that the game gave me. And it really reminded me of kind of the 100 Baby Challenge in that way. And so my friend Jared at BuzzFeed wanted to make a D&D show, and I definitely wanted to be a part of it, and we started it, and we had the first episode, and then the next day, BuzzFeed was sent into quarantine, and that show was the CyberQuest, and it was so disappointing, because so many people had worked on it, but CyberQuest really felt like the show could only be done in person, and so during quarantine, I've kind of sat with it, and my, like, love, you know, just wanting to play D&D and not having anyone to play with. and so from there I started thinking about, well, how would I want to make a D&D show for a new audience that might have never seen it before or experienced it? And like an introductory fun one. And I was thinking about like character tropes, and what's done so well in Dungeons and Daddies is like each of the dads has like a character trope of what the type of dad they are. And so one of my favorite media to, this is a very long answer for your question, and I apologize, but one of my favorite media is like teen drama shows. And so I took that idea and like Dungeons and Dragons fantasy, and I put the two together, and that kind of became the Dungeon Club, which is like an 80s themed teen drama live action role play game. About a bunch of teens that kind of like a kid in King Arthur's court gets sent into a new reality and have to go on a quest. And so that's the show. It's a Twitch live show that will then be put on YouTube as well and hopefully made into a podcast.
Yeah, I believe by the time of this recording, by the time of the release of this podcast, it should be
either it.
It's still going on Twitch or it's on YouTube, so we'll link to whichever it is below.
Yeah,
I'm in the first episode, so...
And Michelle's in it!
listen and watch it, guys.
But yeah, I thought it was interesting that you brought it up, because with all the things that you talked about wanting to do or aspiring to do, I love D&D because, for me, it encompasses all of my favorite things that have to do with storytelling. And what's interesting with you is that it hit the acting for you because you get to play a character. Mm-hmm. It hits writing because you're world building a story and working with the DM in that sense. It hits Twitch streaming now all of a sudden and performing for an audience, producing. There's the whole producing the entire production aspect. So I think it was a really smart idea because it is something, it's a project for you now that is ticking all those boxes, you know? And that's just really, I think, exciting when you find a project that fulfills all of those things that you're interested in and working for. And D&D is one of those, for me, really unique experiences that hits all of those weird things into one. I mean, what has your experience been so far getting to dabble with that?
It's been really fun. I think what's really cool about D&D and live role play games in general is that it's just essentially, it sounds, when I first heard about D&D, I think like my first memory of it, it sounded kind of like, it sounds really nerdy. And I'm really nerdy, but it does sound like really nerdy. And I think that was just like what people said about it. Because the more I got to know it, the more I was like, oh, this is just improv. That's fun and fantasy, but it also doesn't have to be fantasy. The thing about this like game is it could be pretty much whatever you want. It's just collaborative improvisational storytelling with some mechanics to make the game go, right? And that's it. Like, and so when you put it like that, it doesn't seem like such a barrier. I think that was what I always thought. I was like, oh my gosh, it's going to be like one of those card games that I'm not good at, that I have to read 1,000 pages of rules just to play, and I want to be good at it, but you have to like play so much to be good at it, and all these other people have already played it, you know. I feel like I've never played Catan, but I feel like that's kind of like Catan. But like it's kind of one of those things, which also I'm sure like once I play it is going to be a similar experience where I'm like, oh wait, no, I like this. But you know, like I feel like there's such this barrier of like, oh, I don't know if I could grasp it, or I don't know if I could be good at it. And so you don't try. And I think that's a big part of like people being separated from nerd culture in general, is like that feeling that if you don't do it perfectly, or if you don't know everything about it, you're not allowed. Mm-hmm. And that's what I kind of wanted to do with this show, is to be like, yeah, you could totally understand what D&D or a live action role play game is. We can, you know, make it a little more simple and a little more straightforward, and then you can just go for it and learn all of the things. You can get as deep or as not deep as you want to. And I definitely love what you said about it ticking all those boxes, because that's really what it felt like. It was just like, oh, I already like this, and I like this, and I like this, and why have I never played this before? It felt like a duh after I started doing it.
I'm ready to talk about your brand new show on TBS, okay? Let's be real.
Yeah!
You mentioned that one of your goals was to be in the traditional sphere. That is a goal both of us can highly relate to.
For sure.
I mean, it's interesting how people are like, man, it must be so cool to like be a YouTuber and have followers or whatever. But then I feel like every YouTuber is like, I want to be on TV, you know?
Yep.
And then everyone on TV is like, I got to start a YouTube channel. I want to do that.
It is true. Yeah.
Grass is always greener. It's so wild. It is. But I guess it's something that happens when you're a kid and YouTube doesn't exist yet for us. And we look up to movies and TV as that's what we want. So it was weird when a new medium popped up that, yeah, everyone wants to cross over.
I think it's like a grass is always greener side of things. And it's been really cool because we're seeing so many people from, you know, our space, I guess, attempt and get opportunities to try out these traditional things. We got to experience that last year on Karma. So I want to know everything about your experience on Sim Sparked. So how did that happen? Did you audition for it? Like, how did you get to be a part of this? Well, tell us about the show, first of all, for anyone listening.
Sure.
Who doesn't know what it is. You got to watch.
Yeah. So it's a competitive, creative competition show that surrounds the game The Sims. So essentially, people who are known for being creators online, making content with The Sims, are all brought in. And then they are given challenges in time limits of what to create. And then we just see what happens. A lot of it ends up kind of being almost short film-esque, where they, you know, they want to build a house and then characters and then a story and then present it at the end.
Wow. So how did you become a part of this new show?
So I'd been making Sims content for about probably a year and a half. And then I got a phone call randomly from a member of the Sim Sparked team, and they were like, hey, like, hope you're well. We have this really cool opportunity for you. Would you be interested? And I'm like, what is it? And they obviously couldn't tell me because I wasn't under NDA yet.
Oh. So
they pretty much were just like, do you want to do a thing? And I was like, I guess. So then I had to, you know, go through the whole process of like signing it and everything. And then they kind of were like, all right, so we're wanting to do kind of a competitive sim show. And your name popped up because we love your sim content. And at the time they were talking kind of between me hosting and me maybe being a judge. And they landed on wanting me to be a judge of the show. And I like remember just be having this like big panic moment of like, oh, I don't know if I'm qualified for that. And because I think that a lot of times when you get new opportunities of things you haven't done before, there can be definitely that imposter syndrome of being like, oh, am I qualified to do this?
Yes.
But like, you know, I grew up watching reality TV with my family. I loved American Idol and, you know, a bunch of other challenging shows. Survivor, which is what Karma reminded me of in some ways. And I loved it. So it was cool to be like, oh, this is something that hasn't really been done before. It's like if you could take popular reality TV and mix it with esports almost, like what would that look like? And I thought it was like a really good match. I think that people that love The Sims also love a little bit of drama. That's why I like The Sims. And I was super intrigued. I was super intrigued and excited.
As at the time of this recording, it's only been 1 week, 2 weeks since it's been out?
Today is the release of the second episode this evening.
Okay.
So and yeah, then, only 1 week. But I've known about it for a year.
So you've known about it for a year. When did you guys film it?
We filmed it in December of 2019. So about over half a year ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That is so interesting. You mentioned imposter syndrome too. I had the same experience going on Karma. I was like, yeah, I host on my channel, but like this is a real TV show. Like there's a jib crane and
wow,
you know, hundreds of people looking at you when you're doing, maybe, okay, not 100 people, but like there were people and they were adults.
I think
and they were
alone
looking at me
watching you.
Yeah, that was scary. It's not scary, but it's like I gotta deliver. And I'm curious if you feel this way too, but I personally feel that there's a stigma in the industry. Maybe it's me, you know, part of my imposter syndrome, that when an influencer gets an opportunity in the traditional space, sometimes it's written off as they got the opportunity because they have followers and not because they're qualified for the job. And I mean, we can all point to examples where maybe that's the case. And what someone is very good at on one platform doesn't transfer over. And so because of that, I felt this extra drive to prove I'm not only, you know, going to try and just do my best for my own career, but also for other women, for other women of color, for other people who, you know, are making videos back at home and they find an audience and want to take it somewhere else. And that's a lot of pressure when you're like going against all of this. Did you feel any of that, or was it different because of the nature of the show?
No, I think I definitely felt a similar thing of like, I'm just a judge because I'm like a YouTuber and like not a professional in a field, which in a sense I am a professional in a field. I play The Sims for a living. But in somehow in my brain, yeah, I had a similar thing where I was like, I hope that I do a great job to prove, kind of like you said, like that there's training there. Like I started as an actress, and I feel like a little bit of fear out of like maybe trying to step into that again, for the same reason that you said, that I feel like people would either discredit you because you're like, oh, well, you're just a influencer, or they would hire you because of that and not because of your merit. And it's like, so you want to just like prove yourself, like, and go the extra distance. Yeah, it's definitely a surprise, because I don't think I would have thought that before. And then during, I was like, oh, I'm not a good enough Sims player to be the judge of Sims players. I constantly make mistakes in my gameplay and people point them out. Like, how am I supposed to be the expert at this? And then secondarily, like, I'm not like, I don't know, I'm just a YouTuber. And I think that's kind of part of the fear, is like, you haven't succeeded at this other thing yet. And that's in your brain better or bigger than you. And so until you get there, you feel like you're not qualified or like good enough, and you have to like rise up to this higher standard. But in reality, like, I think that people choose you for the job because they think that you are the person for it. And I like want to trust that, but it's hard. It's hard to think that there isn't some like sneaky reason for your success. Like it was an accident and people just keep getting it wrong. Do you ever have that feeling where you're like, like, you know, I keep just getting lucky.
Oh my God. Every day.
And there's like no hard
and it's
work.
It's confusing too, because Garrett has incredible luck. Like, he is the luckiest person, I think, on planet Earth. Just the way things happen for Garrett is, I don't even know an example to share.
Well, I found you.
Okay. Not that, but you know what I mean?
That. I 100% attribute that to luck as well. Like I have this weird sense of luck often. Where are you going with that?
I guess this.
Oh, attributing some success to our weird luck that we have?
Well, I don't even know if I have that much luck, but it's because I spend so much time with you. I think it just like sharing the same air. It rubs
great.
Off
I'm
on gl- me.
I'm
or
glad.
Something.
I'm glad you get to have some of it.
One of the benefits of living with Garrett. I don't.
You're a very lucky person too. I don't know where you're going with this.
That's the end of this statement.
I think it's easy, as you said, to write off certain successes as just luck, and you just keep getting lucky. But at a certain point, like, you know, people are hiring you or wanting you to do things based on your prior success. And, you know, some of those things may have been luck, and luck is, especially in the YouTube world or the digital world, is definitely a part of it. But I mean, if you keep replicating it, I think you have to at some point give yourself credit for the work that you put in, even if everyone's first shot is luck to some extent.
Yeah. But, or even like, oh, I got the job because the content or the ask is so niche that, of course, like, there are only 10 people and I guess I'm one of them, kind of thing. Right. But also, like, good on you, good on us, good on whoever for having the foresight to know that that niche would be successful later. Like, yeah, I think, you guys.
Sure, luck is a thing, but I also think there is a way to create your own luck. It's putting yourself into positions and into opportunities that will pay off in the future. So, yeah, I do think you can call a lot of it luck, but you create that luck, if that makes sense. So I'm a big believer in that.
No, I agree.
I'm going to hit you with another difficult question. What is your – so for Challenge Accepted, every video we do is rooted in either an insecurity or a fear with Michelle with different things. For you, what is maybe one of your biggest fears or insecurities that's kind of linked to your career?
Ooh. Oh my gosh. I think, honestly, and this one's going to seem like a little, well, I don't want to judge myself. Honestly, I think failure is just a big one. So, like, the fear of trying because you fear failure. So there's certain things, like, I don't, like, want to try again, because if I didn't try it, then I can't fail at it. Because, like, so things like acting or, like I said, writing, things like other hobbies or I think a lot of those, like, stepping outside of the things I've, like, proven I can do. I think when I was younger, it was so much easier because I didn't have a career beneath me. So I was like, I don't know, I'm not good at anything. I'm already starting at failure, right? Like, I'm out of college, I don't have anything else to do, so I might as well try. And I think that as I've gotten older, I've gotten more afraid of the try. And so, like, I think it makes it that much more exciting, but that's much more scary to be like, what if I swerve and, like, you know, put to the side all these things that I've worked hard for to try something new and fail at it and then, like, lose it all or something, you know? Like, I think that's, like, a big scary thing is when you're trying to take on a new project. For example, like, the Dungeon Club. It still kind of scares me because I'm like, what if that project isn't a big win and people don't like it? And I could have instead done Sims content like I normally do, and I know people like it. So it's hard. It's hard sometimes to just, like, do different stuff and not keep doing the same.
So when you have those conversations in your head and you know you're going to make a decision that is maybe to you a big risk or a big, what if this fails? How do you overcome that in your head? Like, is there a pivotal moment of, do you always weigh two options? Like, how does that decision-making process for you when you decide, you know what? No, I am going to try this time on this one thing.
Yeah. Well, there's, like, a couple things. One is that a lot of times when I notice something scares me, it means I should do it. Like, a lot of videos when I was first starting with BuzzFeed really scared me. I did a video about women trying to orgasm, and that was, like, a really scary video for me because I've never been super open and, like, talkative about sexuality. And when I was in there, I was discussing, well, no one else is going to do this video, and this video scares the crap out of me because I'm not that open. And so I want to do that for my past self, for my younger self, to be able to watch that video and be like, oh, this is normal to talk about. This is a thing that women have and should talk about. And so I kind of try to remind myself of all the other times I chose not to do it, even though I'm afraid, and how it worked out and how I grew. And so I try to remind myself of that. And then the second thing I like to do is I like to kind of, like, weigh these two things, like, I think Hannah Hart said it once, and it really struck a chord with me, but I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was her. Am I doing this thing out of faith? Like, am I choosing not to do it out of faith because I know something intuitively, or am I choosing not to do it out of fear? And if it's just out of fear alone, and there's no other reason underneath it, then I know that, like, this decision is something that I should be more pursuing and, like, pushing myself to grow. So that's normally how I try to talk myself out of not doing stuff that I'm afraid of. And also just if it's fun. If it's fun and I'm enjoying it, even if it fails, I had a fun time doing it. And those fun hours are totally worth it. Those having a lot of fun and doing it is a reward in and of itself. And it's not always about the numbers.
I feel like you guys share a lot of parallels with that decision-making process.
Yeah, I mean, especially like when I left BuzzFeed and started my own channel, I was so focused on, I just need to get views, I need to grow. Otherwise, I mean, there was a financial risk. I mean, if you don't succeed, then what was I going to do? And then I had to eventually get to this point of, it's okay to do things for myself and to do a project that's creative and maybe cost some money of my own to invest in. And then I realized over time, getting hits is so, it's important for the health of a business online. Getting views and selling the ad dollars is a part of it. Like, I will never deny that. But then there's also times when you have to say, I'm going to do this creative thing. I don't know how many views or whatever it will get, but I will get fulfilled. And I know that people who will see it will see what I was trying to do. And I feel like on some of those lower viewing videos, we get some of the most meaningful comments, which I think is really powerful. That's the end of what I was going to say.
I love that. That was great. I really could relate to that.
Well, I want to be mindful of the time. We have taken a lot of yours. Is there anything else that you want to share, Kelsey?
I mean, I could just chat with you guys all day. This is so fun.
So tell us what you've got going on next. You've got the Dungeon Club coming out on YouTube, hopefully on YouTube by the time this releases.
So right now is definitely the Dungeon Club is kind of my main project, and obviously the releases of The Sims Sparked. Looking forward to the future, the final, hopefully final or penultimate season of the 100 Baby Challenge will be coming. We've got about less than half the babies to go. So I think it's about 30... something 30 something oh my babies God. To go
wow
I think we're at 60 maybe it's 40 something I don't remember I think it's 37 I should remember but it's hard to remember that many but definitely bringing that back, and then after that I don't know, which honestly is enough into my future to just know like I'm like you know horizon. What I, this the rest of the year I know the rest of the year, and other than that we'll find out.
Well, it was so great chatting with you, Kelsey. I'm so, so excited about the Dungeon Club. Again, I'm in episode one. Hey, come hang out. And thank you so much for spending an hour of your time with us.
Thank you so much for having me. This is great. It's always fun to chat with you. And I think this was a very fun one in terms of knowing this person and having known you at the beginning of my career, and to come back and catch up and talk in a real deep real way. It was fun.
It's really great. Guys, be sure to follow Kelsey on Instagram, Twitch, and YouTube at Kelsey Dangerous and at Kelsey MPGK. Links for everything will be below. Watch her new show, Sim Sparked, on TBS. And be sure to watch out for The Dungeon Club, which I'm in episode one, coming out. If you guys made it to the end of this episode, congratulations. Mission accomplished. We'll see you next time.
See ya.